Phil, welcome. How are you?
Good, Joey. How are you? How's the summer going?
It's been great,
yeah.
Actually, you know, and you know, I work in the concert business, my full-time job, but yeah, great summer. You know, ticket sales have been great. I think everybody's been sensitive to the economy. The economy has come back to a certain degree. I imagine, you know, in the business of the NHL, you've seen that as well. It seemed like you guys had a great year. It was funny because, you know, we talked lockout and that's all we talked about. And I saw you on television far too many times, not looking happy and having to deal with a lot of stuff that I'm sure you didn't want to deal with. But once that was all done and it was water under the bridge, people forgot about it pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think, look, we were really, really pleased. I mean, it was an unfortunate way to start the season and wish it could have come out a little bit differently in terms of how quickly we could reach an agreement. But it is what it is. And, you know, we dropped the puck on January 19th. And I'd say from there until, you know, the Stanley Cup was awarded, it was a good season. So, you know, thank you to our fans, and we've turned the page and we're looking forward and things are bright. So everything's good.
And things are bright from a look, the cap's going down this year, as everyone knows, and that's a byproduct of what happened last year. Do you think next year, and I know you may not be able to prognosticate, do you think next year it gets back to where it was this year? You think it's got a shot at doing that? You've got the Coors Light outdoor series. You got the game at the Big House. And people don't know how much money those games generate. And you're a gate-driven league, largely. You have a much better TV deal than you've ever had, but you're still a gate-driven league. And they generate a considerable amount of revenue, those games.
Yeah, they do. You know, we go through a projection process throughout the year. I would say that we're certainly projecting an increase in the cap next year, preliminarily. You know, we'll see what happens between now and then. I'm not sure I've seen a model that gets as high as $70 million for next year. But again, look, we said it really throughout the, you know, even our last agreement. I mean, good news can't be bad news. So, you know, we want to grow our revenues, and the higher our revenues go, the higher the cap will go.
And look, when it comes to revenues, it's a game that's driven by the jersey, right? Like, especially in a market like Toronto, fans here are so passionate. Look, they're passionate about the Blue Jays. They're passionate about the Raptors. They're even passionate about Toronto FC, even though those teams don't perform. The Leafs made the playoffs. The Leafs are the most valuable franchise in the league. They're a team that made the playoffs for the first time in a long time last year. You've got situations around the NHL, and I think I said it the other day, you know, people sometimes will harp on the NHL and, oh, you know, Glendale, the building's half empty. Oh, New Jersey, there's nobody in the seats. Oh, and Long Island has done a great job of coming back because of their young stars, and you saw the fans come out. But other leagues kind of get a pass. You know, the NFL gets a pass. And in Major League Baseball, the Florida Marlins, there's a story today, they're selling tickets for a dollar.
Right.
You don't have any markets selling tickets for a dollar, do you?
No, we don't. You know what? It's good that you're saying that. You know, that's sometimes the way we feel that we're singled out for undue criticism. But, you know, it is what it is. We're really pleased. You know, we have a fantastic fan base. We have the best fan base in all of professional sports. That fan base is growing. You know, I think our markets are by and large strong markets. I mean, you're right about Toronto. Toronto's a passionate sports marketplace, and obviously passionate about the Leafs. And you know, they can go through a long period of time of not making the playoffs and still have no issues. So, you know, it's about being in the right markets. It's about having the right management. It's about putting the right players on the ice. And I think the system that the collective bargaining agreement has created, for better or for worse, creates, you know, a competitive balance that this league's never seen. So you can go from one season to the next and do what the Montreal Canadiens did, finishing 15th in the East to the top of their division last year. And you see those stories more and more. And I think that's compelling for the fan base. So that's a good thing.
And as far as the way the league came back after the labor stoppage, and look, it got bitter at times. A lot of players got involved. You could see everyone wanted to play. And as I said, once you started playing and you dropped the puck, it was a whirlwind. And actually, as a fan, I sit here and wonder what it would be like to have a shorter season. I know that's never going to happen because of, you know, the revenue and the MPA and everything. But, man, you had a pretty amazing season. And the Chicago Blackhawks winning the Cup again. And then, you know, there's over 2 million people down in Grant Park and on, you know, Lakeshore. It's just, it's amazing when Chicago wins the Cup. I know it would pale in comparison if Toronto won the Cup. The whole, you know, Ontario would shut down, right? but tell us about the season and in your mind, the compressed schedule, how it, you think, affected the season. It seemed like it affected it in a positive way to me. There was a game every night.
Yeah, you know, it clearly was a sprint to the end, and you know, 48 games and basically, I think it was originally 99. Days, you know, we ended up having to add a day to the regular season because of the Boston, the bombing in Boston. So it ended up being a 100-day regular season game with 48 regular season games. So it was really a game every other night for teams. What our a lot of fans fail to realize is that time of the year, you know, which, you know, is basically from January until the end of the regular season, our clubs are playing that amount of games. So it was a normal density for that time of the year. The difference was our guys were doing it with coming off of, you know, a multi-month shutdown with only a 6-day training camp and, you know, having to jump into that type of schedule right away, whereas in a normal regular season, October and November are generally lighter schedule. So it was a change for them, and certainly I would imagine on some nights there was fatigue, but the our injury statistics you know held certainly stable, and I think it was really exciting for the fans. So you know we made the best out of a bad situation.
And you really did. It's 10:13. I'm Joey Vannetta. You're listening to Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And Bill Daly is with us, the deputy commissioner, or as I like to call him, the good cop of the National Hockey League. Gary gets sometimes the bad cop, although sometimes Gary's been the good cop a lot more. How do you and Gary interact with each other?
We interact frequently with each other.
Yes,
no,
he's probably listening right now.
We're together. We spend a lot of time together, obviously, to communicate regularly. He's a great person to work for. I think if people got to know him a lot more, he probably wouldn't get some of the unfair criticism that he gets. He's very, very passionate about the game. He's incredibly smart, and he's really, really loyal. And so when you work in an organization and work for one person in particular, which is my case, you really admire that about the person.
Let's talk about there's a press conference, I think, this morning regarding the New Jersey Devils, and thankfully – it didn't drag on like, you know, that situation didn't drag on like you had to run the team in Arizona for four seasons. What's going on in New Jersey this morning?
Well, since that press conference is happening at 11, I won't break any news, but I think most of the people, you know, in your profession, in the media, have kind of been able to get to the bottom of what they think the announcement's going to be. It's going to be a positive announcement. It's going to be good for the New Jersey Devils. It's going to be good for the city of Newark. You know, we're looking forward for bright days of that franchise. You know, it was unfortunate for them, you know, coming off a Stanley Cup final appearance 2 years ago.
Unexpectedly, which was fantastic revenue-wise.
Yep, of course. And to lose half a season with that kind of momentum. And then last year, if you were in that building frequently, which I was, it probably was the most energized I'd seen that building since they moved to Newark. So I think the vital signs there are good. I think the future is bright for the Devils. And I think today's announcement is going to make it even more exciting for Devils fans.
Bill Daly's with us, the deputy commissioner of the National Hockey League. We're going to take your phone calls. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, or star 590 on your cell phone. Bill is willing to take some calls. Thank you very much.
Happy to do it.
If you have some questions, hopefully they're relevant, intelligent questions. I mean, you could ask him what his favorite color is. I'm sure he'll tell us. And we have to say happy birthday. Your daughter's here.
Happy birthday to my daughter. She was born 17 years ago today, 17th birthday. So happy birthday, Taylor. And my 14-year-old son is here with me as well. I'm here for a couple of days, actually, to get some vacation in.
You come to Toronto,
For vacation? Yeah, I know it's a strange concept, but we're doing it.
Okay, so before we get to phone calls, and we're going to play a little bit of a clip here of Jonathan Toews that's made some headlines. We had him on the show yesterday, and we asked him about PEDs and PEDs being in the news the last couple of weeks. I mean, look, it's been in the news for years, but kind of the meter goes up and down based on who gets suspended in baseball. When you're walking around different cities, let's kind of rank the cities that you get recognized in the most. What's number one?
Toronto. No, you know, it'd be really any Canadian city. You know, obviously there's, you know, people who watch TSN or Sportsnet,
yep,
or CBC will see, you know, they often don't know who I am, and they can't place a name, but they certainly recognize the face. So I get a lot of, you know, he works for the NHLPA. I'm like, well, close.
I don't think Don would be really happy to hear that.
No. So, but there's a pretty high recognition factor in Canadian cities. And then, you know, in the U.S., it really depends on the city, and it depends on how prominent hockey is in the city.
New York, certainly, I would imagine.
New York, there's so many people in New York, though. I mean, one of the reasons I think some of our players love playing in New York is you can really it's such a big city with so many people that you really can kind of fit in without having a large public profile, which is, you know, what a lot of professional athletes will like to do.
So Jonathan Toews has made headlines. We had him on the show yesterday, and I asked him about PEDs and the players in hockey. I ask every guy that I've had on, because hockey players, and I won't say of all sports, but hockey players, it doesn't seem to be part of the culture. It doesn't seem to be something that is discussed in NHL locker rooms. Guys work out. They're arguably in the greatest shape of any pro athletes. I mean, look, they're some of the best-looking guys. When you talk to girls about hockey players, are the number one guys who they say are good-looking guys and take care of themselves. So here's Jonathan Toews talking about performance-enhancing drugs.
I think it'd be naive to say that there's no one in the NHL that is trying to get the edge in that fashion. But I think at the end of the day, whether you get caught now, down the road, at some point, those sort of things come out, at least, and that's your legacy.
And so you hear that clip, and it's kind of been misconstrued that Jonathan said that players in the NHL are juicing. Of course, that's where it goes, right? Right away, it goes to players are juicing. And yesterday, you really, I don't know if you released a statement, but it was reported that the NHL is going to be testing for HGH at some point. So tell us, when is that going to happen? And first off, comment on what Jonathan said.
Yeah, I think, to the extent it's making headlines that all of a sudden we have a PED problem, I don't think that's a fair characterization of what Jonathan was trying to say. I think it's fair to say that in any sector of society, you're going to have some percentage of some type of thing. And we talked about it a little bit off air. I mean, you're never going to have 100% total certainty that you have an entirely clean population. And that's why we have a drug program, and that's why we implemented and we negotiated a drug program in 2004, 2005. We went over it again during our last collective bargaining negotiation. We actually stepped up the testing protocol quite a bit in this collective bargaining agreement, where we expanded the scope of testing. You know, it used to be that we only tested during the regular season on a random basis. We now are testing during the playoffs and off season on a random basis. We've changed the prohibited substance list to expand it in scope, making sure we were hitting the right substances. But I think overall, it is safe to say that this is a sport where it is not part of the culture. And I think that's evidenced not only by the fact that we've gone through 7 years of testing in our league, where we've only had one positive test, but also because such a large segment of our player population participate in international competitions where they're tested regularly, under the toughest testing regimes that exist, you know, the WADA testing regimes. And again, we don't have issue, you know, we haven't had issues. Again, I'm not saying that every player in the National Hockey League or no player in the National Hockey League has never used a prohibited substance, because that would be, as Jonathan said, naive to say. But I don't think it's a problem in our sport that warrants kind of an overreaction.
And you talk about the testing and how rigorous it is, and especially for guys, and you don't know if you're going to make the Olympic team, and it's an Olympic year, so there's even that layer of it added on, right, with the IOC. But let's talk about the Olympics really, really quickly. You got it done. I'm sure it was a sprint to the finish line for that. And how difficult was it getting that deal done? How important was it for the league? I know the players want to play, but is it important to be in the Olympics for the NHL?
Well, you know, I think it's a closer question for the league and the business of the league than people want to give it credit for, because it is a disruption to our business. There's no doubt. You know, we're shutting down our season next year for 17 days. during the period of time where, you know, we're filling our buildings every night. You know, it's
I talked to Michael Yormark, not to interrupt, but, you know, during for teams like Florida, he said to me, and for those of you that don't know, Michael runs the Florida Panthers and the building down there. And he said to me, we had him on the air, and before December, like he said, if we don't start playing by November, when I get the Snowbirds in December down here, and he has those games mm-hmm. with the Montreal Canadiens, with the Toronto Maple Leafs, with the New York Rangers, when his building is full, he's like, you know, for him, he said, I don't really, January, February isn't his best period, but it's the best period for the rest of the league almost.
Right. No, it's the height of our business. There's no doubt about that. And then you take on top of that, you know, the hockey considerations, and, you know, you're letting your best 160, 170 players go play in a very intense 2-week tournament where they're participating for their countries, and the risk of injury, quite frankly, is very, very high. And so you're risking very, very valuable assets who you're paying a lot of money to go participate in a tournament that really doesn't directly impact your team. And so when you come back and you're missing two or three of your best players because they got hurt in the Olympics, you don't feel real warm and fuzzy about Olympic participation. Yeah. But that's, you know, that's with your NHL hat on. I think overall, ultimately, we've made a determination. This is going to be the fifth Olympic Games we're participating in, that being associated with the Olympic Games, which is the largest sports platform in the world, is positive for your brand and for the popularity of hockey long term, and that's kind of the bigger picture that you have to keep in mind when you're making that decision.
And having been to a couple of them myself, 2002 in Salt Lake and 2010 in Vancouver, obviously both in North America, it's pretty exciting. Those gold medal games. I mean, the U.S. Canada game was just. It might have been the best hockey game I've ever been to.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, it's interesting. We've had different experiences in the four different Olympics, and, you know, it's probably in terms of positive experiences, you know, Vancouver was over and above probably the best, and Salt Lake is very close behind, and both of those featured a Canadian U.S. Olympic gold medal game right in prime time here in North America on home soil. So, you know, those factors lend toward a positive experience when, you know, and in Vancouver, we were almost injury free, which mm-hmm. is also another important aspect. In Torino, unfortunately, we had a high incidence of injuries, and we had a lot of cranky club general managers and club owners who had to return to a playoff race without their best players. And, you know, so we've had different experiences. We'll continue to have different experiences, I'm sure, as we go to Sochi. Knock on wood. Hopefully it's a great, compelling tournament, and we have no NHL player injuries, any player injuries, yeah, but
again,
the
knock
NHL
on wood. As you said, we're going to take some calls. If you want to grab those headphones there, sure. Hopefully you can hear yourself. Just let me know if you can't. You okay?
Yep, I'm good.
Okay, so we're going to go to Eddie from Fort Erie. Eddie, how are you this morning?
Good, Joey. How are you?
Good. You're on with Bill Daly. What do you have to ask him?
Well, good morning, Mr. Daly. It's nice to hear from you.
Good morning, Eddie.
I wanted to ask you about the realignment. Two things. One, how has the feedback gone from the fans and the teams? And how long were you talking about the realignment? Because a lot of it's all new to a lot of people who have been used to the 1-8 conference seedings in the past.
Yeah, it's a fair question. We actually were in the realignment, kind of conceptualizing realignment for a long time, like two or so years. It was a process that we wanted to do with the Players Association and get their buy-in and support. In terms of feedback, I think generally positive feedback. I think people are kind of excited about the new playoff format and want to see how it works out. I know our general managers for a long period of time have been advocating and suggesting we go back to more divisional based playoffs because they view it as a way to build rivalries within your division. I think, you know, the proof will be in the pudding. We haven't played games under the new alignment yet, and we'll see how the playoff races work and how the playoffs play out. Obviously, you can't take a snapshot. You have to look at that over a period of time to see how it works. But we're excited. We think it'll work well.
We'll take another call. Mike from Burlington, you are on with Bill Daly.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Good morning,
excellent,
Mike.
Excellent.
one comment and two quick questions, and I'll hang up and gladly listen. Not too thrilled about the East-West alignment, how, you know, this proportionate amount of teams in the East 16 as opposed to the West who have 14. Not just my biggest beef as we speak. A couple questions to Bill. Any anticipation of expansion within the next 3 to 5 years? I guess it might, if there is any, it might be in the West to balance out the conferences. And the other question I have is, I noticed on the NHL preseason schedule that Saskatoon and Vegas are both hosting 2 preseason games each. I was just wondering, is it up to the league where they go for these neutral site exhibition games, or does there have to be a group from a particular city that approaches the league to say, hey, we would like to host an exhibition game? The reason I'm asking is, some years ago, Hamilton always used to host 1 to 2 preseason games, and recently there's been nothing, but yet markets like Vegas and Saskatoon, like I said, are hosting 2 this September. I'd like to know what the protocol is on hosting a preseason game and why Hamilton was omitted. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay, sure. I'll start with your comment on realignment and having 16 teams in the East and 14 teams in the West. I would agree with you. It's not perfect. We all wish we lived in a perfect world, but the bottom line is we have 16 teams in the East and 14 teams in the West. And that makes it very, very difficult if you try to shoehorn, which we have in the past, obviously, a team like Detroit or Columbus into a Western schedule, especially when we're redoing the divisions, and alignment, having them, have the travel burdens that they would have in a revised NHL was really too much to ask of them. So we had talked early on that when it came to realignment, when it came time to realign, and obviously with the addition of Winnipeg, it came to a point where we had to realign, that we would give serious consideration to moving them to the East. So that's what we did. And agreed, it's not perfect, and we'll see where we go from here. And that kind of segues into your second question, which is expansion and whether that's on the horizon for the National Hockey League. What we've said, Commissioner and myself, both on numerous occasions, is our primary concern is our current markets and our current ownership groups and making sure we're as stable as we can be. We obviously have a long-term collective bargaining agreement in place now. I think we're on the road to stabilizing certain situations within our league that weren't stable before. And today's announcement, I think, will further that in that direction. And at that point in time, then the issue and question of expansion is certainly open for consideration by our board, because we'll be in a place where we're able to look forward, we're able to plan for the future, and whether expansion makes sense for this league or not is something that the board can consider in a kind of a clean environment. With respect to preseason games,
there are 2 games in Vegas, by the way.
Okay. I know the Los Angeles Kings actually play a yearly game in Vegas.
Yes, they do. It's the Frozen Fury, as they like to call it.
So what's the second game?
The second game that I see in Vegas, it's L.A. versus the Rangers and then L.A. versus Colorado. So 2 games.
Okay, so L.A. is just really
doing it. So that means Luke is going to lose a fortune at the tables.
L.A. is really just doing a doubleheader in Vegas. So L.A., through their ownership of AEG, obviously has relationships in Vegas, and they typically play at the MGM Grand. So that's a long-standing engagement that they have.
Bill, we were talking about the 2 exhibition games that are in Las Vegas. Caller asked, how is that process, and how do you select the cities? Let's go through some of those cities that you're going to be in. I mean, look, you're playing in Baltimore. You're playing in Barrie. I mean, you're playing Oklahoma City, Quebec City, Saskatchewan, Saskatoon, and a couple of games featuring the LA Kings in Las Vegas. So how is that process? How is that process arrived at? What do you guys, every year, is it just, hey, we should go here, we haven't been here before, or what's the process?
Actually, in our league, it's team-driven. So the teams kind of make their own preseason schedules. They hook up with other teams. A lot of times they will do a home-and-home. If they have a long-standing relationship, they look for rivalries. They look for connections to a city. So a lot of times they'll do a game in their minor league AHL affiliate marketplace. You know, there are promoters out there who want NHL games in their cities who will go solicit some of our teams to have a neutral
site game. There's a financial element, too. So, the teams make money, right?
So it's mostly, again, team-driven, but promoters in particular cities will go out and chase games. Our role, obviously, is to approve of the matchups that are scheduled. Each team under our new collective bargaining agreement has to play between 6 and 8 preseason games. You know, we have to approve the final exhibition game schedule, and we have to make sure that the neutral sites are up to NHL standards, so that the players aren't in a barn when they're dressing.
Which is kind of like that happens sometimes when they play in the KHL. Let's talk really quickly, KHL. You've had a sometimes contentious relationship with the KHL. You've got the NFL, who has offices in Europe. You've got the NBA, who has, you know, offices in the Far East and India. I believe they've just put an office in. The NHL, hockey's I won't say a global sport, because in the warm weather countries, you're never going to have a hockey team. But in markets, you know, like Sweden and Finland and Norway and Germany, where there are, you know, local professional leagues, do you see that as an opportunity in the future? I know we're talking expansion within North America, but this is it's a partially global game. I mean, it's all over the world, warm weather countries notwithstanding.
Yeah, no, we actually think we're the most international of all the North American-based league sports, and we view our international opportunities to be kind of at the top of the list in terms of business opportunities for expansion. Not necessarily, physical expansion, putting teams in Europe, playing part of our schedule, although that may happen down the road.
The website's in other languages. That says it all.
Exactly. I mean, it's being on the ground in Europe, communicating and working with the existing hockey infrastructure in Europe, because that's also something that distinguishes us from somebody like the NFL, who, you know, there's no existing American football infrastructure in Europe, and basketball, even the NBA, there's really not an existing infrastructure. As you mentioned, I mean, you have long-standing professional hockey leagues in each of the major hockey countries in Europe, and we have a good relationship with them, and we're committed to working with them to grow the sport globally, for their benefit as well as for the benefit of the National Hockey League and our players.
And before we let you go, again, it's your daughter's birthday. You've come to Toronto for a vacation, which I find funny in and of itself. You're going to be walking around and everybody's going to be going, hey, wait a second, what are you doing here? Before I let you go, the outdoor games this year, there's going to be 6 of them. There's going to be a couple of them in New York. The Leafs are going to be part of the one in Michigan against the Detroit Red Wings. There's the HBO 24/7 that has been very successful and a great branding tool for the league. LA Kings, Anaheim Ducks, Dodger Stadium. The Dodgers are the story in Major League Baseball right now with Yasiel Puig. They came back again last night. They are on fire. LA and LA, Anaheim at Dodger Stadium. The last time you played a game in warm weather that extreme, I think it was 1993 at Caesars Palace in Las Vegas.
Rangers Kings,
Gretzky on the Kings, and it was like 105 degrees at ice level. How do you pull off a game in L.A. at Dodger Stadium?
Well, hopefully you can tell me that, because I know you spent a lot of time in Southern California, Joey. What I understand and what we're led to believe, and obviously we looked at weather trends over a long period of time and before deciding to put this game here, is that it does get cool, at the end of January at night. And we other than Pittsburgh, we haven't played one of these games at night. So we think dry weather, relatively cool weather, we shouldn't have ice condition problems. We have a much broader acceptable scope for ice conditions than people might think, in terms of how warm it can be and still keep good ice conditions. And obviously we have the best ice makers in the world. And the technology now, as compared to 1993, is far advanced. So we're hoping, knock on wood, we don't have any adverse weather conditions, whether it be warm weather or whether it be rain or the like, and hopefully it comes out off great. Obviously we think this is a great opportunity for our fans to participate in the outdoor game experience, and it would be unfortunate if we can't bring these types of games to fans in markets like Southern California.